I guess I should turn that off. Yeah, that's my ringtone. I'm very excited. Okay.
I just realized that the
Hey, I'm in the middle of a panel. Oh, awesome. Hey, how's it going? You know, we're having technical difficulties. That's why I answered the phone. Hey, who here knows Michelle Bellanger from the Dark Shadows track? She's awesome. It's her. Hey, all right, yes, I'll be at Shindig. Okay. All right. No, I'm actually on my panel right now in front of the microphone. Bye. I was stalling. That was on purpose. Maybe I'll turn this off.
Okay. All right. We got everything ready to go.
Okay.
Okay. I want to start by asking. So, what exactly do you get out of putting your personal life, thoughts, fantasies, whatever else, out on the internet? What do you get out of that?
Babes. Definitely the babes. Actually, I started out my website as an educational resource, and the reason that I did that was when I first, I first became polyamorous before I knew that the word polyamory existed, and for a long time, I've been actively polyamorous for about, I guess, 26 years, give or take now, and for a long time, the thing that I discovered was that I had made just about every mistake it's possible to make. And I do believe that experience is the best teacher, but I also think it's one of the most expensive, and I rather wish that I had seen other people making these mistakes so I wouldn't have to. So I started my website, actually, as a resource for people who wanted to get into BDSM and polyamory, but didn't know anybody else who was into it, didn't have any experience, and were looking for, you know, somebody to say, well, here's what works, here's kind of what doesn't work, here's some things that you kind of have to watch out for. And it really sort of grew from that. And it's the kind of resource that I wish I would have had 20 years before it existed. And that was my goal in doing it. And since then, it's just kind of mushroomed and kept snowballing into this big, sprawling thing. But that's how it started.
What he said. It was almost exactly the same thing. I started my first polyamorous relationship about 6.5 years ago, we made every mistake in the book, especially over the first year and a half, which was just drama, drama, drama all the time. And we just didn't know. We didn't have any poly friends. There were books, but we couldn't really find a lot of online resources, and we couldn't find people to talk to. And sometimes if you're talking to your poly friends about, like, well, you know, I get a little jealous when, you know, I know that he did X with her instead of Y with me. And they're like, well, what do you expect? He's married. it's not helpful at all. So I started it just because I figured if I can, help out other people to avoid some of the landmines that I made with respect to the emotional and psychological and sexual issues that, you know, if it could help somebody else so that they wouldn't have to be as dumb as I was, that's how Polyweekly got started.
Okay, so those are the advantages. What are the disadvantages of putting yourself out there that way?
I wouldn't suggest you do it if you have a regular job. I've actually found that it hasn't really had any downsides for me besides bandwidth charges, which were a problem for a while. Mm-hmm. Because I am self-employed and I work for a company that I'm a minority partner in, aside from that. And so, you know, it's not possible that my employer is going to, you know, find out about my secret life and get all upset about it or anything like that. So for me, I don't have a lot of issues that could come up and cause me problems if people found out about me being poly, me being kinky, whatever. I don't have kids. I've never been involved in custody disputes, which is sometimes a big problem for people in alternative sexualities. So I haven't really, other than the cost of bandwidth, had any downsides, to be quite honest.
Everybody thinks I get laid, and I just don't get laid nearly as often as people think I do. Just because I talk about sex doesn't mean I'm actually having it all the time. Anyway. Yes, please. Yes, room 1704. I probably should have given my actual room number. It's at the... anyway. Actually, and I have a little bit of a different situation because I do a blog and podcast under, I mean, my parents did not name me Minx. I know that's really surprising. And I don't use my real name because I already had my own business that was online under my real name. And my goal is that I did not want someone to Google my real name and find the naked pictures of Minx because there are a lot of them floating around. And you're welcome. For the most part, yes. It's been really difficult, and I have to say it is really, really taxing. I have a professional blog and a professional podcast and a professional Facebook and a professional Twitter and a professional friend feed. And then I have two Minx blogs, a Minx podcast. I don't have a Minx Facebook because I simply haven't had time to put it up. Minx Twitter, and I have to be very careful about how I log in. I have a Minx Flickr. I have a under my real name Flickr, and I have to be very careful. And I'm always like logging in and logging out of things and double checking, and it's really frankly a pain in the ass.
If I may make a proposal, and I have some credit for this because I'm both a certified security professional and a certified privacy professional, get two separate computers.
I do, actually. That ended up being the solution is on my desktop, I always log in as one person, and on my laptop, I log in as the other. Doesn't work as well when I'm traveling, when I obviously only have access to one. But for example, on my iPhone, I have two Twitter applications. On Twitterific, I log in as Minx, and on Twitterlater, I'm logged in as my real name. So I have to double check which application I'm on and everything. It's kind of a pain, but it's really unfortunate because mostly that it's less because I'm poly and more because I talk about sex and BDSM. I talk really freely about like sex and orgasms and here's what toy was in my ass last night. And because I post naked pictures. And unfortunately, while it's a lot more socially acceptable for men to talk about sex and have sex online, any woman that is shown anything sexually online, you can lose a job. It's just, you can lose a job, you can lose credibility. And I had, for a while, I had very conservative Japanese clients that, even though they probably downloaded the pictures of Minx and didn't know it was me, would have fired me from my rather public contract work that I do for them if their clients knew. So it was very tricky that I have clients that might understand because they know me and like me, but they have to think of their clients and their customers. And if their customers could Google my real name and find out the naked pictures of Minx, then that might be a problem for them, no matter how tolerant my clients actually are. And it's just unfortunate. Women and sex, you get zero credibility online if it's not your full-time job and you're not Violet Blue.
Okay, let's see. So, how have you helped others by putting yourself out there?
I get a lot of email from my website, and a lot of the email I get is along the lines of, oh my God, I never knew there was anybody else out there like me,
Yeah.
I've always been interested in this kind of stuff, and I never knew how to approach it. I didn't know if it was okay to explore these things. There's actually a lot of the emails I get are emails saying, I'm in this situation, I'm brand new to it, what do I do, how do I meet other people who are interested in it, and I get usually probably about 15 or 20 of those emails a week just from my website, and then there's quite a few people who read the blog as well, and I get a lot of conversations started in the blog. One of the more interesting emails that I've actually ever received from my website was from my BDSM website rather than my poly website. This person wrote to me, he's like, I read your website about BDSM, I was looking it up online, and I've always been interested in trying these things. I've always really found this fascinating. And I've been married for 10 years, but I've never known how to approach my wife with it. What do you think I should do? And I said, I think you should talk to her about it. If you're interested in something, one of life's tricky little rules is that
that's
you can't...
That's just crazy talk.
Yes.
Never communicate with your spouse about the desires that will pleasure you. That's always a bad idea.
It's always a bad scene, yes. But one of life's tricky little rules is you can't expect to have what you want if you don't ask for what you want. And it took me actually probably, 37 years to figure that out. But... So I said, one of the ways you can approach it is by saying, hey, I'm interested in trying... whatever. What do you think about that? So I got an email about 3 weeks later after I'd sent him out this email, and he was like, well, I did what you said. And I was expecting, I was like, oh God, here it comes. He was like, I did what you said. I sat down with my wife and I said, you know, I've always been interested in exploring these things. What do you think? And she told me, well, I've always been interested in exploring these things too, but I've never known how to approach you about it. In fact, 15 years ago, before we met, I was really big in the BDSM scene. But, you know, when we started dating, I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to scare you off. So, you know, there's 10 years that they could have been exploring these things that both of them wanted to, and they didn't know how to approach it. And sometimes, you know, just getting your foot in the door is really the hardest part. But like I said, I get a lot of those emails every week, and my advice is usually the same. You know, talk to your partner, do it outside of the bedroom. You know, hey, tie me up when you're in the middle of sex. Probably not the best time to spring that on somebody, and see where it goes. And it seems to work surprisingly well. It really does.
What he said. Making it so much easier on me.
Well, I am to please.
I have to. It's the same thing. I mean, I really love it when people email me and say, you know, here's my story, yada yada. And I never knew there were people out there like me. I never knew there was a word for this. I never knew I could do it. Either, you know, I've been doing this and didn't really know what to call it, or I've always wanted to do this and I didn't know it was an option. Like, are you allowed to? Can we really? Seriously? Really? Can we do that? And those I love, because it's the, of course you can. It's finding the community. I'm all about, you know, passionate communities and finding, you know, whoever it is. Whatever your kink or weird thing is, there's going to be somebody who's into it. And it's just a matter of going out and finding them. And I find that really rewarding. That.
Yeah, well, we live in a world where somebody can put an ad in a personal site and say, I want somebody that I can have sex with, kill, and eat. And not only will he get a response, he'll have to sort through the responses. So, yeah, it's like, I've actually been sort of thinking about putting together sort of a landscape of the human sexual experience. Because I really think that a lot of people think, well, my sexual experience is this big, and the possible things that people can do without being total perverts is this big, and the possible things that people do out there, you know, all the really kinky perverts, is this big, where in reality, you know, the sexual experience that human beings have is so vast. And sometimes really all it takes is just seeing somebody else who does these things to sort of give yourself permission to explore these things. And so you can just say, hey, there's another person out there who does this. I'm not all alone.
Actually, I'll say, too, one of the things I like to hear, oddly enough, is I did a listener poll at one point, and it was so weird that almost 50% of the audience identifies as monogamous. And I love getting the emails where people say, you know what, I've been listening to your show, I listen with my husband, I listen with my wife, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we've decided to be monogamous, which is great, because to me, then it's an active choice. Then you're not hiding your proclivities from your partner for 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's all I really, I think, ever wanted with anything was, you know, for people to know, like me, that this was a choice, and to not have that choice be so hard. To be able to facilitate this discussion with your partner where you can go and say, hey, I thought about this, and you talk about it, maybe you try it for a little bit, maybe you decide, you know what, that's really not, it doesn't really work for us. Having monogamy be a conscious choice, to me, that's where the power of polyamory lies. Oh my God, I'm so tired. That didn't even make any sense, did it?
Well, I definitely think that life is better when it's lived with intentionality. You know, there's nothing wrong with monogamy, but where the problem is simply accepting the social default without ever thinking about it. Yeah. I think that people who choose to be monogamous are really cool. You know, I do not believe, oh, you know, poly people are more enlightened or anything like that. But I do think that
I am.
Of course you are. But I do think very strongly, though, that simply living your life by accepting the social default, whatever it happens to be, and living your life by taking the path of least resistance from cradle to grave, probably not the best way to live.
Can you say your quote that I love so much?
Which one?
Life rewards.
Life rewards courage, yes. I do believe very strongly.
The one I like is, life rewards those who move in the direction of greatest courage.
Yes.
So it's like the, do things that you're afraid of, try things that you're afraid of, even if it doesn't work out, I believe when you said that, it gave me chills. Give me chills just to think about it now. I really do believe that that's true. Even if you try something and it doesn't work out, I think it does make you a stronger, braver person for the next thing that you have to overcome.
Oh.
There's a question like behind a question. You. Do you want to move a mic around? Or?
I don't usually need one to be heard.
But you're being recorded now, so.
No, are these input mics for the recording, or is it that one?
Yeah, well, this I've got a shotgun now. That can pick most things up. It can definitely pick him up. So.
At the risk of pulling us back towards the dry legal freedom of speech stuff from the more salacious parts, you both had indicated that you get certain types of emails, and they really indicate the success. I suspect that from time to time you also get the, I tried and it failed miserably and now we're getting divorced. And the question is, have you ever ended up on the receiving end of a legal threat or an actual filed lawsuit because you caused my divorce? No, of course you didn't, but has that happened and how has the law...
You know, in the 11 or 12 years or however much it's been since my website went up, I've never gotten the, oh my God, you caused me to get divorced. I've never gotten one of those emails. I've gotten probably... maybe 15 negative emails of any type whatsoever in that entire span, and a lot of those are kind of incomprehensible. You know.
Okay, so it's not just me. All right. Yeah, I can't even think of any really negative emails that I've received. Oddly enough, the thing is that it's my presence is much more of a podcast than as a blog, and podcast takes time to listen to. You have to opt in. You have to find it's linear. You can't skim it. So you have to really invest in order to listen to the podcast. And, you know, I just assume that people who don't agree, people who don't like it, just unsubscribe. They just don't listen. I mean, you have to really, why would you listen to a podcast or read a blog that you really don't like or that you really disagree with? You go find a writer that you do agree with or a podcast you do agree with. I think I did really early on get an email from some guy, I think it was in Germany, and it was kind of incomprehensible, but I think it was the German thing. And I was trying to, and it was like really dense with like, it's like, you know, the big blocks of text with no paragraph breaks. And I'm just, it was like blinding to try and read. And it was saying something about, oh, yes, I'm so glad I found your podcast. I've been poly for a long time, and, you know, I'm just really glad, and, I just really can't wait to tell my wife about my mistress that we've been poly with for the last 8 years. And and so I tried to find a polite but firm way to say, you know, this is you might have some issues with broken trust and honesty, and, you know, if you want to be poly, great, but this is going to be really difficult. And then his wife emailed me after. And then she emailed me, and she was actually very nice about it. She was saying, I'm not really trying to blame you, but I want to know more about this. And it just broke my heart because she was obviously very blindsided. And, you know, he pointed her to the podcast to try and help, and it didn't really. And then I found out later that they did. I think he emailed or something, or she emailed and said, yeah, they got divorced. But it wasn't... Nobody's ever blamed me that I know of. There may be somebody spitting in a back room right now going, oh, that damn fucking minx planted ideas in her head.
You know, that kind of situation, actually, in the parts of the poly community I'm familiar with, there's a technical term for that. We call that cheating.
I think, I'm trying to remember, it was so long ago, it was very early on, and I think there was one guy that I actually did email and said, you know what, and I don't usually tell people you're poly or you're not, because everybody has a different definition, and you know, I believe you get to decide what it is that you call yourself, and whatever label you're comfortable with is fine. You define your own relationship, yada, yada, yada.
Maestro works for me.
I emailed him and said, dude, you're not poly. You're a cheater. You've been cheating. You're not being honest. That's bad. Go fix it.
Polly, so. You're doing it wrong.
Exactly. You're doing it wrong. I think that's the only time I ever actually, and it was really early on, I actually came out and said, dude, you are doing it wrong.
Okay, does your family know about what you do online with the sex-positive sites and your friends? Or maybe you're in a situation where all your friends these days are poly-friendly, kink-friendly?
Many of my friends are in this room right now, so... Yes. My family knows. They've always known. They choose really not to read my site. They usually don't, you know, read my blog or anything like that. I can't say that I blame them. If they had a blog that talks about the things I talk about, I wouldn't read theirs either. But yeah, some things you just don't want to think about family members doing. But yeah, I mean, my family has always known. Everybody that I know has always known. There's never been a time in my life when I haven't been poly and kinky for as long as I've known that boys and girls are different. And there's never been a time in my life when I've really thought about trying to conceal it from anyone. And my take on that is, you know, if your family finds out the truth about you, or if a friend finds out the truth about you, and because they know this truth, now they suddenly don't like you anymore, well, they never actually did like you. They may have liked a projection of you, but they never actually liked you. You can't love somebody you don't know. So I've never tried to conceal anything, and, you know, it's worked surprisingly well. And this is actually sort of something that I say often, but I do believe that people in general will often take their cues about how to respond to something from you. If you're open and casual about it, people usually treat it like it's no big deal. If you treat it like it's a shameful secret, if you try to hide it, you don't want to talk about it, people will respond to you as though they feel like you should be ashamed of it. There are situations where you really don't, there are people in your life you really don't want to know. You know, if I'm the people that I work with don't always know, and that's fine. One of the people that I work with is actually in this room right now. But, you know, like for the most part, most of the people that I work with don't need to know. But it's out there if they want to find it.
I've actually, and I have a different experience. Hey, look, a panel. Most of my friends at this point are, you know, poly-friendly, kink-friendly, at least. They're not all poly and kinky, but they kind of know. A lot of people don't even know my real name because they met me as Minx, and I've just always been Minx, and that's it. And so that's, like, my circle of friends now. That was not the case at the beginning, of course. And as far as family, I am out to one family member, my younger brother. My family is from Texas. My dad's passed away. My mom barely understands the concept of being gay. So I made the choice not to come out to my other brother and sister, like the family that I have left, because, frankly, because I'm lazy and I do not want to have to go through the extremely lengthy explanation process.
in order to do it, I'm not with that.
I know. Actually, I say this because a lot of people say, oh, I won't come out to my family. It would hurt them. You know, my mom's old. She won't understand. I'm like, fuck no. It's because I'm lazy. It's not for her. It's not to protect them. It is. I'm just honest. It's to protect me. It's because I don't want to have to go through all this with them. I maybe see my family once a year, if that. It's just not worth it to me. I don't want to sit up the one time a year I see my family for 48 hours and bring this up and spend the whole weekend answering questions. I just don't want to. I don't really care that much if they know or not, because I'm not close to my family. I will say, though, when I first became poly and kinky, my friends weren't poly and kinky, so I came out to my vanilla friends, and I did not do it terribly well most of the time. I would highly recommend the interview I did with Michelle Bellanger, the lovely lady who just called. Great interview I did with her on tolerance, where she gave really good advice on how to come out, similar to what you said, which I completely agree with, is that when I came out, I was coming out with this chip on my shoulder, like, okay, here's why monogamy is bad. You know, here's why I'm doing this with poly, because, you know, it really works for me, and it's just really great, and you better accept me, because I'm doing something different from you, and I'm better than you. And and my friends did not have the best response to this, not surprisingly. And when I did start coming out to people in a much more casual manner, where I was obviously comfortable with it, it really was no big deal. I mean, sometimes I got a blink, sometimes I got, you know, the most conservative people that you would think, oh my God, he's going to freak out if I tell him. When I was comfortable with it, it became very easy, and most people had, you know, at worst was a, yeah, I don't think that would work for me, but okay. And that was the worst reaction I've got in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, I would say.
Yeah, I had a coming out experience at a job that I worked at many years ago that was kind of interesting. There's I was at work, and it was just at a shift change, so the place was packed. I was working pre-press, and so it was Valentine's Day, and this flower delivery guy comes in the front door, and he's got this ginormous bouquet of flowers, and I'm just thinking, ha, 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 somebody's in for it now. And so he walks through the room, and he's like, Franklin VX? I'm like, oh, God. So he gives me this huge bouquet of flowers, and of course, everybody's there, so 15, 20 people in the room, they're all like, oh, is that from your wife? And I looked at the card, no, it's from my girlfriend. It's to me and my wife. And they were like, oh, really? How does that work? And I said, it works pretty well.
Very well. Nice.
So, being very off, open, very sort of offhand and casual about it, it tends to really smooth the rough parts over very nicely.
I will say, again, anything work-related, I don't tend to come out. There's no reason they need to know. I'm not usually talking about my sex life at work. There have been a couple of occasions when there are some listeners to both podcasts, and there are one or two people who have actually listened to one podcast and the other, and then they're like, oh my God, are you Minx? Is Minx you? And because they have found that through their own means, the responses have actually been very positive. I've actually gotten more professional work because of it, because now they think I'm cool. To my knowledge, I have not lost any work because of it.
Do you think you would have been as comfortable if the card, and I'm not saying this is for you or not for you, if the card had been from your boyfriend to your wife and you?
I probably would have been. Actually, I consider the fact that I'm straight to be a bug and not a feature. I consider the fact that I'm straight to be a bug and not a feature. So, yeah, I mean, Of course, it's impossible to go back in time and run the experiment, but yeah, I think I probably would have. God bless Twitter.
Okay, any issues with overzealous fans, stalkers?
Overzealous fans, no. Stalkers...
I usually end
from
up
here?
Dating cool. Like half my stalkers. I'm like, they're here already. Sure.
I was followed around online by a woman from Australia for a while. I was in a relationship with a partner who was monogamous, and I was on a polymono community, and she was also on this polymono community. She was the monogamous partner of a polyamorous person. And since I was coming down on the side of the polyamorous people, she decided that I was the devil. And not only did she decide that I was the devil, from this mailing list she found my website. From the website she found my blog, and from my blog she found all of the online communities that I was in or ever had been in, and joined all of them.
Wow, that is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. She put a lot of effort into this. And you know, she got nothing back from it because I never even acknowledged her. I mean, when this started, I just quit responding to her at all. But yeah, I mean, she would follow me onto communities like programming troubleshooting communities, had nothing to do with polyamory, and she would post messages there about, you know, I am the devil. And I kind of sort of have this sick, morbid... Yes, get used to it. You will see it again. I kind of sort of have this sick, morbid curiosity about, you know, what she was getting out of this. I mean, why she was doing this, what was in it for her. But I didn't actually want to communicate with her, so I'd never asked her. I can speculate that she was unhappy with her polyamorous partner, and she saw me as kind of the target to vent this all on. I don't know. But eventually, she just quit. I mean, I never responded to her. I never responded to her. Never responded to her. And she just disappeared one day. And I haven't heard anything back.
Do you have a favorite quote from one of her messages?
You know, I don't. I stopped reading them.
He's the devil.
Yes. I left them up on my journal. I didn't bother to delete them. But I didn't read them either.
You know, I actually do have... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Do you kill bunnies?
I do not. But, yes, actually, Shelley and I had gone outside, and there was this baby lizard just right out of the egg. I mean, this little guy was, like, this big. He was so cute. And so I caught him, and he was just having a ball. He was running up and down my arm. He was running all over me, and Shelley took some pictures. And I posted pictures in my blog of this little teeny tiny newborn lizard, and she was like, I can't believe you like baby animals.
Ha, 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 ha,
Yes, and my car runs on the blood of the unbaptized.
Baby lizards.
Actually, it isn't. You'd be surprised how expensive it is.
Wow. That's, you know, you did actually bring to mind, there is this one guy in the kink community that at some point, for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, but I have theories, just decided that I was his arch nemesis. And
it wasn't me?
It wasn't you, no.
I have to do something about that.
No, I have this other arch nemesis. And what's really funny is it's not that, you know, I'm poly and he's monogamous. It's that I'm poly and he's a different kind of non-monogamous than I am. And apparently, you know, from everything I hear, like, he just goes around the community dissing me. And I pretty much decided to fight back. It makes me laugh. So I pretty much fight back by only ever saying really, really, really nice things about him. And it actually works pretty well.
But the real question is, do you like baby animals?
Nobody likes baby animals.
Bunnies.
I can't believe you like baby bunnies. Now she's
moving
in the
on. Zone. Like, I don't know what to say now. Moving on. Bunny. We've hit eating baby bunnies. I don't know. Where do we go from there?
Have you ever encountered a virtual geography in which someone attempted to universally censor you because by their local ridiculous community standards, you were obscene?
Actually, no.
How would you find out if you were censored in a...
Oh, because your blog post, your ISP would get some kind of crazy, unenforceable legal demand, and they would let you know about it.
I've never had anything like that. I did have a legal demand to stop using the trademark Myers-Briggs because of a parody that I did of the Myers-Briggs personality inventory, but that's the closest I've ever come to any sort of legal trouble. So I just changed the Myers-Briggs everywhere to like Jungian personality archetype or something, and then said at the bottom of the page, you know, this page is not affiliated in any way with Myers-Briggs, so I'm still Googleable by the phrase Myers-Briggs, and in fact, I think I'm like the second hit. But as far as any sort of, you know, censoring or any sort of violation of community standards, no.
Yeah, I haven't really had any problems. Again, I feel like, at least until this point so far, that people who aren't interested just don't read. I mean, they have better things. They're surfing for porn. You know, much better uses of their time than going and reading about polyamory and how to communicate with your partner about things that can make your sex life better.
So that they wouldn't need so much porn.
Well, what else is the internet for?
The internet is for porn.
Exactly. And baby animals.
Oh, our both.
Ew. Ooh, let's not even walk down that road. I'm sure there are probably communities where the stuff that I write could be considered obscene. Probably not very popular in Iran. Probably not very popular in Mississippi. But nobody's ever tried any legal demands or legal threats. Yes?
One of the concerns most often raised by people who post this sort of material being available on the internet is that if anyone under the age of 18 sees it, they'll go blind and die. Do you take any steps to restrict access to your blogs and podcasts from minors?
I do not. In fact, for some reason, LiveJournal still hasn't glommed onto the fact that I talk about sex. LiveJournal has a feature where if they rate your blog, and I don't know how they find blogs to rate, as being available only for people who are not minors, if you try to read a blog entry and you aren't logged in, you know, it will give you this little message that says, you know, this may contain adult material, are you sure you want to continue? And my blog has never been flagged like that. And my website doesn't say anything about that either. I assume that people who can read are probably people who can make their own decisions. Probably a bad assumption on my part, but so far it's worked pretty well.
On my podcast, I do put an under 18 warning that says, if you're under 18, don't listen to this, go to scarletteen.com, which is a great sex-positive site where you can get answers to your questions. But as far as the blogs, no, I don't... I don't put any filters or restrictions on them. If you're under 18 and reading about, you know, how to communicate and be socially sensitive with your partner, then, you know, more power to you.
I was curious, and this is going to be sort of a broad thing, but in all of the questions you've received back, specifically related to polyamory, what's been the one that has given you sort of the most pause to actually need to think about before you respond to your answer to?
For me, that one is easy. I am the monogamous girlfriend of a boyfriend who's polyamorous. Mm. I knew he was polyamorous when we started the relationship, but I think he has another lover he's not telling me about. That email turned into an exchange between the two of us that ran probably to 70, 75,000 words. There's an edited, actually, transcript of that exchange on my website that I successfully edited down to about 11,000 words. But there's a lot of really, really good stuff in there, because one of the things that she really wanted to talk about was the philosophy of polyamory versus the philosophy of monogamy. And she is an intelligent, well-reasoned, well-spoken person who just happens to be deeply, profoundly monogamous. And that actually was a very profitable exchange. And that's one of the most popular pages on my website, actually, is the Polymono Dialogue. I think that she came away from the exchange understanding polyamory, but still choosing not to be polyamorous, still feeling like it wasn't right for her. And the way that she was able to articulate the experiences that she had with a polyamorous person, the experiences she had being the monogamous half of a polymono relationship, was just wonderful. And I asked her, you know, do you mind if I put this exchange up on my website? Because I really think that people out there can profit from this. And it has become one of the most popular pages on my poly site.
I actually can't think of anything off the top of my head. I am never going to write 75,000 words in response to anything. These days, if you get like a 2-sentence email reply, that's a lot from me.
Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
320
If
characters?
I can do it, 140.
140.
You don't Twitter, do
I
you?
I do not Twitter. I don't understand.
300 characters.
I do not understand Twitter.
I don't
Twitter.
Even know you.
It's like we just can't communicate anymore.
Okay. Have you had any issues with ISPs or hosting over adult content? Have there been any issues with the so-called 2257 law?
Not yet, knock on wood. As far as I understand, 2257 really only applies to depictions of sexual activity. I'm not 100% sure about that. But the only issues I've had with my ISP was when Earthlink got it into their heads that they were going to charge me like $20 a gigabyte for bandwidth or something like that. And yeah, they socked me with a bill one month that was obscene, and I moved the site 3 days later. But I've never had any problems with ISPs complaining about the content of the site. I've never received any sort of objections to the type of material that I've posted.
I've never had any problems at all. The biggest problem I have is fucking trackback and comment spam from insurance companies and poker sites. I must spend 10 minutes a day deleting that crap.
Oh, by the way, the Russians also like Polyamory Weekly as a keyword.
Really?
You can do a keyword search for Polyamory Weekly. And
that's why I've been getting all that Russian spam.
Yes, and you will get booby-trapped sites that try to download W32 Zolab.
What is that again?
What?
You said trackback?
I actually disabled trackbacks. It's just a way of pinging back to a referring site.
Okay.
You know, like when you hotlink to something, it's just it's like the reverse of hotlinking to something.
Yeah, if you post a blog entry and then other people refer to that blog entry, then their reference to your blog entry becomes a comment in your blog.
Okay.
And it's a clever system that's been abused to the point that it's useless.
Yeah. Spammers are evil and should die.
And okay. Sometimes do. And sometimes shoot their families before they do.
Okay, I missed this news. I didn't hear this.
Yeah, spammer gets sentenced to federal prison, breaks out of prison, kills his family, shoots himself.
Oh my God,
this was
really?
Like recently, a couple months ago, I think. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't on Twitter.
He didn't really.
Okay, recommendations that you might have for anybody else putting a sex positive site out there?
Don't use Earthlink.
I would really caution, especially for women, Unfortunately, women talking about sex, there is just more of a stigma than men talking about sex. Men, it's like, cool, oh yeah, uh-huh. Women, it's like, it really can affect your career and family and custody and all kinds of things. So think long and hard about using a pseudonym, how much it can protect you, what kind of images you're willing to have online, what kind of distinguishing characteristics and photos you're are willing to have online, and what would happen if the one person that you never, ever, ever want to read that blog entry, hear that podcast, or see that photo does in fact have it, and are you see it, listen to it, or read it, and are you willing to deal with the consequences of that?
Along those lines, assuming you know what the One Life Take Two issue currently is.
The what?
Have you heard about that? One Life Take Two, the blog? Jefferson was a New York City sex blogger who... For those that don't know, Jefferson is a New York City sex blogger who's been had a relatively popular blog for years and years. He's bisexual, custodial parent, has, when the kids are out of town, has Craigslist orgies at his apartment, has many, 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 many partners, and has a, it was in the middle of a fairly acrimonious post-divorce issue. He continued the blog. It was getting less and less anonymous, and then his ex found it, and now there's a vast custodial battle going on with fundraisers and that sort of thing, and it's being portrayed as he's bisexual, so she's bringing that into the custody battle, but a lot of people are saying it's a wider issue than that because of his lack of anonymity, and I was wondering what your takes on that was.
Child custody can get really messy and really ugly, and people will use any tool that they can against their former partners. And I think that that's something that people who do talk about any part of their personal life at all in a public way really need to think very, very carefully about. I am a big fan of being open. I am a big fan of being honest. I also recognize that there are times when you really have to be careful about that. The two biggest areas of your life where it seems like being in a non-traditional relationship can really collide with the rest of your life are child custody and your career. Mm-hmm. There are companies where you absolutely positively cannot step outside the line or you will lose your job. But I have personally known people who have gotten involved in child custody disputes, and they haven't even really been out or been public about being poly, being kinky, whatever it is, and it's still come back to bite them in child custody cases. And that's really one of the situations where I don't think there's an easy answer.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it doesn't matter how private your blog is. It doesn't matter if only three people read it. There's, unfortunately, a very sad joke in the poly and kink communities that in a divorce, the first person to point the finger at the other one and say, he's poly, she's kinky, wins and gets the kids. Doesn't matter if they both did it, all three, 20 people, doesn't matter if everything was consensual and all the documentation supports that, the first person to freak out the judge and point at the other one wins the kids. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. So that's, if you have kids, even if the kids are, that's the thing, even if the kids are okay with it, even if you're they're at an age where you can let them have a level of information about your social activities, about your sexual orientation, if you come out to your kids as bisexual or gay, and they're okay with it. And it doesn't matter if they go in front of the judge and say, really, I'm fine, I knew, it's okay, there were no orgies, or I never saw any, or doesn't matter. It's about freaking out the judge and the public.
Mm-hmm. I would say, if you're going in front of a judge, if your kid is going in front of the judge, and there's custody issues, I don't know that a kid of that age needs to have any knowledge.
Well, actually, I didn't say what age. I said age appropriate. I'm not talking...
No, I'm talking about child custody for kids under 18. I can't imagine your 15-year-old wants to know anything about who you're doing.
Well, some people can come out to a 15-year-old, for example, as bisexual. They can know that maybe one parent is gay. They can know that the parents are poly and that the people that are coming over are, you know, they call aunts, or they'll be like the other mommy, the other daddy, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who's fucking whom in the ass? Yeah, probably not, I'm going to assume, but... I'm saying with respect to orientation and general, like who these people are and that kind of things, there's a level of appropriateness.
And you do see people who live in permanent, long-term, poly triads or quads who have kids together. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're not going to conceal from your children that there are more than two adults in their family.
Right.
But even something that simple can become a real serious issue in child custody. I don't have kids. I don't have a job that I have to worry about. I'm a guy. All of these things weigh in my favor. They make it much easier for me to be open than somebody who has to worry about children, somebody who has to worry about their job, somebody who, as she said, is a woman. So for me, I have the luxury of being very, very open about this, but that doesn't mean that it's appropriate for everyone to be. Yes?
I think something worth emphasizing about the internet and what you put on the internet is that it lasts forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend some years ago who said, who wanted to take pictures of us having sex, and I said, I don't think that's a great idea because it may be amusing to have these pictures for a few minutes, but they last forever. You know, if she's mm-hmm. in her 30s, I say, who knows, if 10 years from now, you might be running for PTA, and these pictures wind up in your local paper, or, you know, you, 20 years from now, you die, but your son, who's 7, is going to find them in a drawer somewhere, you know. You might have be very happy in the relationship you have with the father of your son, who was your living boyfriend, and all that, but 15 years down the road, you might end up getting divorced, you know, or split up, and these pictures come out of a drawer somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Keep in mind that photos are permanent, especially individually.
And the Wayback Machine is awesome for that. I mean, you'd be amazed what you can
good
dig up,
bad,
you know,
yeah.
years
yeah.
after it's been pulled down.
I got a question back here.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to both thank you both for coming out and telling people about the alternative lifestyles. And while I may not participate in them, I now know about them, and I know that you aren't some weird, strange people that you're...
Have you seen him?
Oh, but we are.
No.
Yes, we are.
I'm stranger than most.
Well, you just haven't had a party invitation yet. That's the only thing.
No, you're not evil, or you're not immoral, or
he eats
or
bunnies.
Cherub, or whatever it is.
I don't. It's a vicious lie. I'm sorry.
I think you know what I mean.
Sorry, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know about you, but I'm
you
a little punchy.
When you can put a real face on, you know, all of these perverted, kinky things that somebody out there does, it really humanizes the people behind them. You know, you really see, oh, these are not people who eat bunnies and, you know, bite the heads off of rabbits and run their cars on the blood of unbaptized children.
That say,
you know,
I eat
no.
bunnies.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and it, with especially with kink, especially in the media, I actually had a friend in Chicago that in his blog was always posting kink in the media, and the like any mention of kink in the media, he would update, post, and comment on it because I'm looking at the way kink is portrayed in the media, and you see a lot more of it now than you used to. It's out there a lot, but it's, I'm just looking at it going, none of my friends are like, it's nothing like what kink really is, any
yes.
more than, you know, the families that you see depicted on sitcoms are really like a normal family. No, they're not. I mean, that's how real the depictions of, you know, kink and poly and things in the media tend to be.
And the media is not going to show you the healthy, functional, polyamorous triads.
It's really boring.
Because, yeah, that's not the interesting stuff.
It's like, oh, look, people who get along. Oh,
yeah.
Look, they're watching TV together.
There's no story here. Yeah.
Wow, that's really exciting.
This is not going to sell papers.
Actually, when I did my slideshare presentation, that's one of the things I pointed out because I wanted to present polyamory as an option and as something non-threatening. And one of the slides that it was very important to me to put in there is, yes, the sex can be really fun, the sex can be really great. 90% of the time, it's just people sitting around watching TV together, just like you do.
I don't own a TV.
Free! Who eats bunnies?
I don't own a TV, and I don't like ice cream. And he's had his arm up for quite a while there. I'm impressed.
What is your reaction to legal issues where you have a healthy triad and local governments come to try and intervene and
usually that only happens because somebody pulls the trigger on them. The only time I've ever seen that happen is there's a custody dispute or there's a divorce going on and one of the people involved has pulled the trigger on that. I don't think I've ever known or seen a situation where it's not like that.
Yeah.
So
someone's
grandmother,
grandparents
call
you. Oh, yes. That's
more than Joe Polly going on there.
There was a lot more.
Yeah.
What made the news was that they were poly, and the couple got their kids back when the non-biological father agreed to move out.
Oh, yes, I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually, in most places, you have to be really doing something fairly outrageous to get the law involved. You know, you read about situations where you've got somebody beating their child and, you know, the child stays in the house and Child Protective Services doesn't intervene. It seems like it's not as easy to have that happen as a lot of people think it is, unless somebody inside pulls the trigger.
And I think it's a good argument for treating your partners well and making sure everybody's on the same page. Of course, breakups are going to be difficult, but one of the things I've seen in the poly community is that the poly and kink communities are fairly small, depending upon what city you're in. I mean, even not depending, they're fairly small. So if you go around dissing your exes, if you go around trying to slander them, if you go around trying to take their kids away, you may win in the short run, but in the long run, nobody's going to fuck you. Nobody's going to be your partner. Nobody's going to beat you. Nobody's going to be kinky with you because of the way you've behaved in the past. So it's really, I think people do learn pretty quickly within the community that, you know, the way that you behave when there is a breakup, the kinksters and poly people I've known have been really good about not taking sides, remaining friends, doing what you need to do. I have known a couple of cases in the kink community where a couple that had a very young submissive did threaten to go to the police saying that the guy beat her. In fact, that happened to a friend of mine as well. And it was really scary because that's the one thing you don't do in the community is go and say, he beat me, because this is what we do with each other and you don't out other people in the community. And again, you can do that. Both of these cases failed. It was just an idle threat because they were pissed and they didn't actually go to the police. But if they had, they would not be in the community anymore. If you ever want to do anything else within the community, you simply can't do things like that.
Is there any, I'm thinking in terms of damage control. If the one person you do not want to find out about your blog or whatever does find out, do you have any legal protection as far as freedom of speech to say, this is really none of your business, you can't penalize me for this? What's the legal standing on that issue?
Kink and sexual orientation is a protected status. Being polyamorous isn't.
You
can be fired. Kink isn't either. So you can be fired, you can be shunned, you can be whatever for those things. And if somebody outs you, there's not a lot you can do about it.
And there are a lot of situations where, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a legal matter of freedom of speech. It's more a matter of, you know, somebody who you know who is in your social circle finds out, now they're not in your social circle, your employer finds out, and your employer finds a reason to get rid of you. You know, your legal protection in situations like that simply doesn't exist.
Yeah. I've had, again, though, within the communities, I actually had somebody out me in a blog as kinky in very, very explicit ways. And I was doing a vanity search and found it, and fortunately, I was a member of a local kink group at the time that had a specific policy about outing members. If you out somebody in the group, you're out of the group. It is not allowed in any context whatsoever. You simply don't do it. Again, you don't get to be kinky if you do this to kinky people. And she actually raised hell, but eventually did take down the blog.
Although once it's up, it's going to be forever.
Her blog, fortunately for me, it was just a person who had taken a dislike to me and was using her own blog for that. But it was not linked to any other blogs, low traffic. It was really more of a personal journal that nobody else read. There were no inbound links, very low, very, very low profile. So fortunately for me, when she took it down, there were remnants, and I don't think you could find them now if you tried. Although, don't take that as a challenge, please.
I wanted to point out that the freedom of speech applies to government agencies, not private.
That's a distinction that is lost on a lot of people, you know. And yeah, I'll run somebody will come onto my blog and they'll post something, and you know, I'll delete the comment. I very rarely do that unless it's out and out spam. I can count on one hand the number of times I've deleted a comment in my blog. But there has been a situation where that happened, and somebody said, "Oh, you're censoring me. I have freedom of speech." And I said, "Of course you do. You can say anything you want. You can put up your own website. You can start your own blog. What you can't do is use my resources to say whatever you want." And that's the distinction about freedom of speech that is often not understood.
Yeah, and that's actually curable with terms of use. I recommend if anybody is starting anything public online, podcast, blog, forums, whatever, set up a terms of use and say this is, and I, you know, I do this, I specify that, you know, I am the final decider of what is appropriate here. You may appeal, but if I don't like it, if I don't think it's appropriate, I get to delete it. Most of the time what I will do is contact the commenter off list and let the person know why that's inappropriate. I've never had a problem with it. One time I did have to comment to somebody and say, you know, this is not appropriate, just so you know, I'm leaving the comment, but nothing along that vein, because it violates points A, B, and C here in the terms of use, and I can point to it and say, this violates this, so therefore do not do it. And there was also a case when I have a general policy, if you're going to fight on my blog, take it outside. Just like basically if you're at a cocktail party, if you're going to get into a really heated debate, don't do it on my blog, do it somewhere else, take it outside. And I had some people doing that on my blog, and I very politely said, guys, this is interesting, but not to my readers, take it outside. They were happy to do it. They talked to each other, apologized, no problem. You need to specify in your terms of use who gets to decide what's appropriate, what type of language and behavior is and isn't appropriate.
That's a really good idea. I think I will do that.
And I highly recommend the book, and I did this in my class earlier today, Managing Online Forums by Patrick O'Keefe. It's specific to forums, but very, very, very detailed terms of use and behavior, the types of posts that are and aren't allowed, and so you can copy them, mimic them, cut and paste them.
That's a good idea. I like that.
Do we need to wrap up?
I guess just one more question I had. Do you have specific tools and technologies that you recommend for what you're doing online? You mentioned Twitter. Any other things that
go listen to the recording of my building online communities classroom. I went through about 30 or 40 technologies you can use to build communities online. I'm a geek.
I tend to hand roll a lot of the things that I do with the exception of LiveJournal. I've been building websites for so long that almost everything that I do is rolled by hand, so it's kind of rough around the edges, not probably the way that you would want to do it if you had a choice. But there are a lot of tools out there for community building, for forum building, and there's no real reason to roll your own. There are a lot of preforms. I would recommend that people who are interested in creating online forums not use PHPBB. I see it get hacked all the time. But on the other hand, security is hard, so use the tools that are out there. Check them out. Update any software you use religiously. Religiously. I cannot tell you how many times I see people put up WordPress blogs and there will be a security update to WordPress. The people who are using it won't update and they are pwned 16 ways from Sunday. The Boston Public Library's blog got pwned a couple of months ago. And invariably, it's the Russian Zlob gang, and invariably they will hijack your blog and they will start planting viruses on your server. Do not put software on a server that you control if you do not update it religiously.
And back up your databases.
Do not count on your ISP to back up your data for you. That can and will blow up in your face.
Okay, any last questions?
I have a question. How many of the women in this room are willing to stand up and flash me their boobs? Yay! Bring it on. Woo! Awesome. Nice tattoo. Thank you.
See, that's one of the things that where being a woman...
I'm like, Deo? Yay!
Being a woman in online communities and being sex positive is often a liability because people seem to treat men more respectably than women. However, I could probably not have gotten away with asking that question. So there are times when it's advantageous to be a woman.
Actually, yeah, well, being a cute girl, I can get away with a lot of shit that other people can't get away with. Actually, my latest, not here, but when I was hitting on a vanilla person, actually, my opening line was, you know, hi, I'm Minx, and I'll be your stalker today.
Yeah, see, guys say that, just creepy.
Cute girl, it helps. Hey, thanks for coming out, guys.
Thank you very much.
Let's go to Shindig.